Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 movie monologues with special guest B Dizzle from the We Watch the Thing podcast.
Hell yeah, hit it.
Wow.
Welcome to episode 368 of the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of osmosis, so you don't have to. But today is all about the movies and specifically long bits of dialogue in movies, which might probably sounds very, very interesting to you.
That's right. Sounds like monologue you. That's what they say.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to perform these damn well monologues for you.
Oh,
and
God.
All because it came from an idea by our guest today. The one, the only, the amazing B Dizzle from the We Watch the Thing podcast is back. He's loitering on a corner, which is a very old reference to Billy's last time he was on the show. How are you, Billy?
I'm excellent, mate. Being here, I feel like Courtney Cox in that video clip where she gets pulled up on stage. I'm like, oh, fuck yes.
Oh, Dancing in the Dark. Ah.
So it's an honor to be here, gents. Oh. Thank you for having me.
I have on very good authority that you're about 1,000 times nicer than Courtney Cox. So very happy to have you up on stage with us.
And ironically, my cock has been caught many times. All right, fine. Oh,
that's that's a stretch. I don't have the soundboard.
We're in a silly mood today. Oh, no soundboard. Fantastic. Eat a dick, Paul. So, excellent. Well,
not no soundboard. It's not ready yet.
Okay, fine. Now, B Dizzle, your actual name is Billy Dunham, no?
That's correct, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So at some stage today, I'll probably call you Billy D. Billy D. Remember that shit from The Nutty Professor? Yeah, that's the shit.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. Paul, go ahead with that.
Everybody loves The Nutty Professor, as I'm sure you found out last week.
Yo, VIP, let's kick it. That shit is the bomb.
No, it's not. But anyway, look, Billy, where did you come up with this idea? What was it that inspired
you? I don't know, man. Because I sent you a list of about 10, because I was like, look, I want to give these guys something good. I want to make sure it's not a complete shit idea, so I'll give them plenty in case they're all complete crap. But I much like you, Paul, I love writing in films, and I think that there is nothing more beautifully simple than a monologue. All it needs is two things. It's expert writing and a beautiful performance, and that's it. It doesn't matter if the camera doesn't cut away for the full monologue, honestly. Sometimes that's even more powerful. So I was like, you know what? There's nothing kind of more simple and beautiful than a great monologue. And I didn't think you guys had done it yet. So
no, definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you said, let's perform them, that's where I was like, oh, shit. What
so wait, that was Paul's idea? Yeah. Oh, shit. Because he said to me, I said, that sounds great. And then I started doing the notes for this. It's tough because you can say, well, this is the best monologue of all time, but I can't possibly perform
that'll
that
be the
monologue.
Fun part.
Oh, okay. That's a bit. I killed my throat last night practicing some of my voices because I'm like, well, I can't just read them. I got to attempt for it, you know? Like,
I concur. And, you know, we all know how great my walking impression is. Well,
oh, my God. I was sitting there going, what if Paul has a walking impression? Yeah. What if? And of course you do, don't you?
No,
that's
I don't.
Crazy.
No. No. Look, I,
no.
There we are.
What?
Now look,
no.
I did leave off a couple on my list that featured too much language that you cannot use.
Oh yeah, there's some things that were written in the 90s and you can't use certain words.
Yes. Can't okay. use an N-word and you can't use an F-word. So in one of my quotes I have an F-word and one of my quotes have an N-word. I'm just going to go F-slur. Ensler.
Oh, come on. Just
nope.
Just give it to us, man. Give it to us.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep. All right. You mean the F-A-F word, not the F-U-F word.
No,
I was like, I was like, oh, Jesus,
no,
I'm
no.
fucked.
The F-A word, that's right.
Oh, no, we have no problem with the F-U word.
F-U is all over this podcast. So, yes. So there we are. So we'll get into that when we get into the countdown proper. We should probably do that, I reckon, on the other side of the segment which kicks off every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
The recount, where we recount all the shit that happened this week. Paul, what the hell?
Well, not that much shit happened this week, except there was a vote on last week's show, the top 10 remakes, redux with Stu
from
Stu World Order. And we have the results are in, according to the Facebook listener community. And it was a fairly comprehensive victory to you, Wayne. Well done, sir. 28 votes.
Oh, I'm surprised.
Then myself with 18 and Stu bringing up the rear with 6. Always tough on when you're not on home ground territory, as maybe Billy's about to find out.
6 is a guess, I'm telling you. Although, you know, Billy might just ask Ray Post today. It's just, you know, who knows? Who knows?
I'm a lube ready.
Wish list, huh?
That's right. I brought some Vaseline. All right.
So let's hear what some of the comments were. Look, Charles Gretch actually went for me, saying easy choice this week for Paul. The Thing at number one, where it belongs. And also he had The Blob on his list, another great 80s movie. However, Mina Harker said, a TV miniseries is not a film. Hashtag actual remake voting block.
Which one?
It.
Oh, that it's a shot at you?
Yeah, and Stu.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's a vote for you. Well, now, Billy, I think you had a couple of queries about a couple of our lists while you're here. Why not wade in?
Yeah, I'm with Mina, man. That is not a remake. Oh! That is a new adaptation of a book.
So you might say I deserve to win this week.
You might. That said, I did vote for Paul anyway, because hey. Wayne, your list was just not my style.
And still, Paul didn't win. So, you know, I know. I mean, I'm just saying.
Wayne, so basically, what we found out today is more than half of the Facebook listening community doesn't like The Thing. Shame on you all.
Guys, you feel good about yourselves and you go forward into the world like that.
Troy Spinner, of course, he actually actively voted me out because I had The Thing on my list, which prompted me to put a spray at him in terms of using the word The Thing many times.
The Thing in his ass, yes.
So anyway, well done. Even accounting for the cousin vote and the conquest vote, you still comfortably won, so well done. Sir.
Well, that's a wonderful fucking... What a great loser, huh?
You won, well done.
Okay, all right. All good.
That's enough for the recap then. Let's get into it, because this is going to be quite the episode. On the other side of this promo for Live Stream for a Cure, which is now 5 weeks away, we will be wrapping it up, I believe, the last segment or two of the Live Stream for the Cure. Wayne and I will both be on.
I'm in this year.
Wayne on for the first time in 6 years.
He's That's right. I got to get my ass in there. I'm sorry, everyone.
Give his time. And you can ask Wayne all kinds of questions at the end of that particular book. More details will follow. Let's hear from Nick.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nick. I'm the host of Nikolai's Kitchen, and I'm also the host of the annual Live Stream for the Cure. Live Stream for the Cure is a charity event where we raise money with content creators and podcast partners from around the world for the Cancer Research Institute, a wonderful nonprofit researching cancer immunotherapy, training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer. This is a mission and a future that I truly believe in. And myself and my team worked tirelessly over the past 5 years to raise over $50,000 for this cause. This year, we're aiming for our biggest single goal to date of $20,000, and we cannot do it without your help. Please join us for the event May 19th through the 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern, for 45 hours of content from people all over the world. Together, we can bring hope for a future immune to cancer. The more eyes we reach, the more dollars we raise. Please help us in making this goal a reality. Together, we can make a difference.
The top 10 movie monologues, yo,
is the subject of this week's countdown. We've already run down what it's going to involve and how it's going to work, and we're going to throw to our guest to lead us away with his number 10.
I actually found this list really hard. I ended up having like a list of 20 that I had to cull down. Yeah, and especially because the one rule we had was no voiceover.
Yeah, actually thank you for mentioning that. No voiceover, no narration, so it's got to be happening.
In the scene, in situ, as they say.
Yeah, so there were a good 2 or 3 I had to cut.
Yeah, likewise. I would have had one absolutely way higher on my list if not for the fact that it's actually...
Would have made this easier.
Recounting a story. And
All right, so this number 10, like you alluded to, Paul, last time I was on, I kicked things off with Jay and Silent Bob loitering as a top 10 movie crime. And so this time I felt I needed to honor that, and so I'm kicking it off with a little spiel from Mallrats.
Beautiful.
It's delivered by Jason Lee and written by Kevin Smith, and this is one of those monologues. This was a real mixed bag for me, and like numbering things was tough because some like have a lot to say. This one has absolutely nothing to say, but it doesn't make it any less one of my favorites. So here we go.
Oh, interesting.
All right. Let's go. I'm titling this one, My Cousin Jerked Off in Public Once.
Okay. Nice one. Do you want to set up the scene or anything?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess we could do that.
Yeah. In this scene.
So in this scene, they're doing a TV dating show in the mall. And Brody gets asked if he's ever had sex in public. And this is his response that completely silences the entire crowd.
Awesome. Here we go.
My cousin Walter jerked off in public once. True story. He was on a plane to New Mexico when all of a sudden the hydraulics went and the plane started spinning around, going out of control. So he decides it's all over and he whips it out and starts beating it right there. So all the other passengers take a cue from him and they start whipping it out and beating like mad. So all the passengers are beating off, plummeting to their certain doom, when all of a sudden the hydraulics kick back in and the plane rights itself. It lands safely and everyone puts their pieces or whatever, you know, away and deboards. Nobody mentions the phenomenon to anyone else. And the best bit, which is not actually part of the monologue, is that then one of the other contestants comes out with, well, did he come or what?
I was thinking that too. Did everyone come?
Yeah.
And imagine if the plane's in zero G, so there's just jizz floating everywhere. I'm sorry.
There's an image you're not getting out of your head real fast.
Well, Billy, that is quite the way to kick off this countdown. Not what I was anticipating. I'm going to roll around last this time. Wayne.
All right, man. Okay.
What are you going with for your number 10? And we should emphasize, we also sort of made a rule that around about a minute is the maximum you can kind of reach.
Yeah,
for,
otherwise so. People are just going to turn off. Yep. So here we go. This is from Team America World Police. Now, there is a scene. I always liked this show with the marionettes and the puppets in this. But this scene is at the end of the film, and the lead character, Gary, is giving a huge speech to all the world leaders on politics. And it goes a little something like this. Now, I'm going to try to do it in the Trey Parker. He does something with his voice when he does characters. It's a bit of a role. I'm going to try and go there with you, okay? Here we go. We're dicks. We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks. And the Film Actors Guild are pussies. And Kim Jong-il is an asshole. Pussies don't like dicks because pussies get fucked by dicks. But dicks also fuck assholes. Assholes just want to shit on everything. Pussies may think they can deal with assholes their way, but the only thing that can fuck an asshole is a dick with some balls. The problem with dicks is they fuck too much or fuck when it isn't appropriate, and it takes a pussy to show them that. But sometimes, pussies can be so full of shit that they become assholes themselves, because pussies are an inch and a half away from assholes. I don't know much about this crazy, crazy world, but I do know this. If you don't let us fuck this asshole, we're going to have our dick and pussies all covered in shit. Oh. And scene.
Let me just say low.
I'm also going to add low.
Oh, really?
And if you're ever in any doubt as to the quality of the show that you're listening to, the fact that the first two entries today on the top 10 movie monologues involve dicks.
And shit, I think you'll find.
Shit. Pussies and all the rest of it.
Stink palm, yeah, all that.
I think you now are no longer.
They knew what they were
have
for
the wrong impression whatsoever. Now, how are we going to do this? Do we also have a shot at this, Billy?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Do we all
how
have
to? How about you
decide
if you want to? If you think you can go somewhere different with it, feel free. But it's a little hard to hear the exact same words. But maybe you got a different take. Yeah. I don't know.
I think you kind of have to give at least something, otherwise.
Okay, then do a snippet.
People are going to be judging, like, oh, but Wayne read that one and we didn't.
Good point.
So
good point.
Do we do that when we get to it, or do we?
Yeah,
do it
maybe
now?
We'll break it
yeah,
up that way.
It.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right. In that case, we're over to me for my number 10, and it doesn't involve a dick.
Well, then I don't know who
any
fucked up the brief on this one.
You have lost this week, organ. My friend.
It does, however, involve a famous rally speech, which comes from Mel Gibson as William Wallace in Braveheart.
Oh, damn.
As he's getting everybody ready to fight the English. This one was written by Randall Wallace, obviously a descendant. Not. So here we go. I'll just pick the best bit of it. Relatively short.
Go for it, Mel.
I fight and you may die. Run and you'll live, at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Woo! All right.
Nice.
All right.
Love the passion. Love the Scottish accent even
lost
more.
There in the middle, but,
no, no, you swept away with it. You owned it.
And I decided not to try and do Mel Gibson trying to do Scottish. Yeah. That would be impossible.
Oh, it's tough. Yeah. It's tough to reinterpret. Yeah. Chris Pine did this perfectly when he played Captain Kirk, but wasn't at all William Shatner. You know what I'm saying? He was his own guy.
Intonation was good. Yeah. All right, there we are. That's the number 10th one. That's obviously pretty famous. Straight around then to Billy for his number 9. Will there be more genitalia?
Go D.
There is no genitalia in this speech. This is from a rom-com. I'm certain that I've heard Wayne talk about this film before.
There's a good chance, but if you say rom-com, I know it.
But I don't know if this is going to crack anyone else's list. And I'm really curious to see how we go with crossovers for the rest of it. But this is from Say Anything, written by Cameron Crowe in 1989, and it's delivered by John Cusack.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of my favorite monologues of all time. This one popped into my head as soon as I came up with the list, because I think that it's really funny, but it's also really sweet and poignant, and I just think it's great. So he's at the dinner table at his girlfriend's family's house for the first time, and he's asked what he's going to do with his life.
Go. Cool. Yep.
Spend as much time as possible with Diane before she leaves. I'm totally and completely serious. Oh, you mean like career? I don't know. I've thought about this quite a bit, sir, and I have to say, considering what's waiting out there for me, I don't want to sell anything, buy anything, or process anything as a career. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed or buy anything sold or process anything sold, bought, or processed, or repair anything sold, bought, or processed. You know, as a career, I don't want to do that. So my father's in the army. He wants me to join, but I can't work for that corporation. So what I've been doing lately is kickboxing, which is really a new sport, but I think it's got a good future. As far as career longevity knows, I don't really know because, you know, you can't really tell. As a fighter, you've got to be great, but I can't really tell if I'm great until I've had a couple of pro fights. But I haven't been knocked out yet. I don't know. I can't figure it all out tonight, sir. But what I really want to do with my life, I'm going to hang out with your daughter. I'm good at it.
Oh, the last part is very sweet in particular.
Very nice.
How did the dad respond out of interest?
Well, what I love about this speech is just like the silence in the room. And like a couple of times throughout the monologue, he stops talking and everyone at the dinner table just looks at him like he's meant to continue. So he just keeps coming out with more and more crap. I can't remember if the dad responds at the end of that or not.
Or he just cuts away. Okay.
It's funny how eloquence in movies means you're automatically a good person. Like, you're fine. It just solves all your problems.
Yeah.
I just did a good speech so everyone can suck on my ass. So. Yeah.
Alrighty.
Very nice.
Not on my list, and clearly not on yours either way.
No, not on mine. Nope. So there you are. Nice work. Okay, well, my number 9, I'm going to do a little Liam Neeson for you here. Okay, I'm just going to do a little Liam Neeson. Am I stealing everyone's thunder?
Oh, for fuck's sake, yeah. Low.
I want you to do it then.
No, you go.
Okay, all right, here we go. All right, I'll give it to you. Here we go. Of course, I'm talking about from Taken. It's Liam Neeson when he gets a call, and it's a ransom call, and it's about his daughter who's been kidnapped, even though that was horrible. And shit, and he drove back down on the phone and busts a cap on the whatever kidnappers. And he says this: I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But if I, but what I do have is a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you, and I will kill you. There you go.
Oh, there is some excellent passion in that performance.
Yeah, I don't think I really nailed his accent, but then who can?
Once again, tough to do the accent. Very nice, yeah. Coming up on my list, and actually not too far away. So
Not on my list.
Not on yours?
Not on mine.
Okay, fair enough. My number 9, I end up going with this film because I just feel this filmmaker, Quentin Tarantino, needs a lot of acknowledgement in this list.
Oh, shit.
And I wanted to have one of my favorite scenes of all time between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken.
Walken!
Where, I can't remember what his name is. Is it Clarence Worley? Clarence's dad basically realizes he's going to be killed by Walken, this mob guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he just decides to insult the shit out of him.
Dennis Hopper, yeah.
But unfortunately, it has a lot of the N-word in there and it just would break up the whole thing. So I just left that one alone. Instead, I went with another really hard scene to watch in what is another, it's a great film. It's when James Gandolfini is about ready to beat the living shit out of
Patricia Arquette's That's tough.
Alabama. So, and this is what he's talking about here after he's basically knocked her to the ground and is sort of standing over her, you know, trying to get the information on where the money is, or the drugs are. And this is his effort to intimidate.
Oh, and he's the intimidating motherfucker.
This is James Gandolfini. All right, here we go. Now, the first time you kill somebody, that's the hardest. I don't give a shit if you're fucking Wyatt Earp or Jack the Ripper. Remember that guy in Texas? The guy up in that fucking tower that killed all them people? I'll bet you green money that first little black dot he took a bead on, that was the bitch of the bunch. First one is tough, no fucking fooling. The second one ain't no fucking Mardi Gras either. But it's better than the first one because you still feel the same thing, you know? Except it's more diluted. You know, it's better. I threw up on the first one. You believe that? Then the third one? Third one is easy. You level right off. It's no problem. Now I just do it to watch their fucking expressions change.
Cold as fucking ice.
That is a good
one. There you
one.
Go.
That's
there you
good.
Go.
That's a pretty hard to imagine. Not hard to imagine. This is Quentin Tarantino's first script.
Yeah.
He's never been shy about that shit, though.
But it's just amazing that someone can write dialogue like that at their first go.
I know, right? That's how you knew it was the shit. And also, James Gandolfini was young and kind of fit back then. Like, he was actually like a thinner and slenderer guy. And his that curly mouth of his just made him more dangerous looking. Really good actor.
Yeah. Yeah, he is intimidating as hell, even without those words.
I've been watching The Sopranos again lately, and it's like, this stuff is easy to watch now, rewatch.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah. All right, number eight, Billy.
All right, number eight. Here we go with another rom-com. And my first impression cracking out, so we'll see how long this holds, because I'm not very good at it. This is delivered and written by Woody Allen in 1977's Annie Hall. It is the opening scene to the film, which is literally just him against a wall, delivered completely fourth person to camera.
Well, now you've just won Julio's vote.
Yes, you know, I did see this in his... I was really surprised at how all over the place the listener feedback was. I was expecting a couple to just be repeated, but all right, here we go. There's this old joke. Two elderly women are at a Catskill Mountain resort, and one of them says, "Boy, the food in this place is really terrible." And the other one says, "Yeah, I know, at such small portions." Well, that's essentially how I feel about life, full of loneliness and misery and suffering and unhappiness, and it's all over much too quickly. The other important joke for me is this one that's usually attributed to Groucho Marx, but I think it originally appears in Freud's Wit and Its Relation to the Unconscious, and it goes like this. I'm paraphrasing. I'd never want to belong to any club that would have someone like me for a member. That's the key joke of my adult life in terms of my relationships with women. It goes on from there. It's about 4 minutes long, but I'll stop there. But
dude,
I just, I love
it. Fucking nailed that
shit.
Thank
you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wooden shit, man. Damn.
I just love, you know, especially 1977, the boldness of starting this film literally with a monologue to camera and nothing else happening. And I just think that, you know, obviously, I can say I'm a fan of Woody Allen's work, and I don't think you're allowed to say you're a fan of Woody Allen anymore.
No, correct. No. But I tell you what.
I think his writing is fantastic.
Oh, he's the original, but like, I mean, you know what? That impression was so strong. You look a little Jewish to me now.
Thank you. So, Shalom.
Right. We're over Zoom, everyone. I can see him.
Great, great effort there, B Dizzle. All right, Wayne.
Nice one.
How can you follow that one up?
I don't think I can, but I'll show you what I've got. Now, everyone, there's a film called Get Shorty. Ooh. And in it, there's a scene where Delroy Lindo, who is a bad guy, comes up to Chili Palmer, who is John Travolta, and basically is trying to suggest to him that we should work together on a movie because the whole thing is set in Miami and shit like that. So he's talking about writing a script, and Chili Palmer goes, "You know how to write one of these scripts?" And Delroy Lindo comes up with, "There's nothing to it. All you do, you get an idea, you set down what you want to say on paper, then you hire somebody else to fill in all the commas and shit where they belong if you're not positive yourself. Maybe fix up the spelling where you have some tricky words. Although I've seen some scripts, I know the words weren't spelt right. There are hardly any commas in it at all. So I think that's too important. All right, you get to the end, you write, fade out. You done. That's it. That's it. Scene.
That is a great monologue right there.
When you said, I know.
I know.
That sounded like Joe
I got it. I got it.
You know, it's always a little tough when you're doing, like, if you're trying to affect someone's accent, you know, in this because, you know. Okay,
this is all, obviously, this is all not done in jest. Exactly. This is all done out of the utmost of respect and to try and be entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, everyone remember that shit.
All right. Well, my number eight, here's where I had taken. And so here's my rendition there of the exact same thing. No need to, obviously, to set it up.
Here we go.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for ransom, I can tell you. I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If I let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Oh, chills. Shit. Oh. Damn, I think that was better than mine. This is definitely better than mine.
And very kind. I don't know about
that. No, your accent was better because you're closer to white. I should have put some Jackie Chan up in my motherfucker. But yes, that was excellent. Very nice.
Thank you.
Guys, are we starting a theatre company? Is this happening?
Yeah.
The online countdown. Yeah, community watch theater. The thing. Or watch the countdown theatre company.
What about a radio? What about a radio play? We could do that.
Ooh,
that
would, oh yes, that be the yes. Shit?
That might be fun. Yeah, you're a writer. Write something, bitch.
Well, besides Billy, work it out.
You bitches write something.
Wait, why not right, perform? Well. Why not be the Eddie Murphy of the troupe? Right? With like seven voices.
Michael Winslow, if you will.
Well, here at number seven is where I had the brilliant Dick's Fuck Assholes speech from Team America.
Very so, nice.
So do I, am I cracking this one out?
Yeah, give us at least maybe the last couple of... Or
whatever favorite parts are, man.
Yeah, what are your favorite? Yeah, give us at least half of it.
All right, okay, I'll go from... All right, here we go. The problem with dicks is that sometimes they fuck too much, or fuck when it isn't appropriate, and it takes a pussy to show them that. But sometimes pussies get so full of shit that they become assholes themselves, because pussies are only an inch and a half away from assholes. I don't know much in this crazy, crazy world, but I do know that if you don't let us fuck this asshole, we're gonna have our dicks and our pussies all covered in shit.
Oh! See? It's important to get the other people's take, because it's good. That was good.
Very nice. Well played, sir, again.
Nice one,
thank
brother.
Thank you.
Right on to Wayne for number seven.
Oh, really? Okay, so here's a scene done by Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci, ooh. Okay, from Casino. Ooh.
Uh-huh.
And he plays this mob enforcer named Nicky Santoro, who he verbally threatens and intimidates and denounces a banker in a bank demanding to get his money back over the counter. And it goes like this. I think you've gotten the wrong impression about me. I think in all fairness, I should explain to you exactly what it is I do. For example, tomorrow morning, I'll get up nice and early. I'll take a walk down over to the bank. I'll walk in and if you don't have my money for me, I'll crack your fucking head wide open in front of the entire bank. And just about the time that I'm coming out of jail, hopefully you'll be coming out of your coma. And guess what? I'll split your fucking head open again. Because I'm fucking stupid. I don't give a fuck about jail. That's my business. That's what I do. And we know what you do, don't we, Charlie? You fuck people out of money and get away with it. And scene.
Holy shit. Who would have thought that Wayne could do such a perfect Joe Pesci? Good God.
Really?
And
I like the way you smashed your iPad at one point.
I've been
beating
the piss out of this thing all because I'm fucking gesticulating. I'm not used to it being in the spot.
Very nice. That's a good one too. Not on my list. Not on yours either, Billy?
It's
not on mine,
no.
No. All right. Here's one I suspect might be on one or two other lists. Let's find out. I'm the first one to have it. At my number seven is Jack Nicholson as Colonel Nathan Jessup in A Few Good Men.
No!
Oh! Actually, I've been I thought on my list. You'd think it would be, but then I heard your fucking soundboard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
Well, it's funny you say that because, of course, there's only one way to kick off.
No! Don't do it. You got to do yours first. No. Then you got to show. Surely.
That's not part of the monologue because it sets it up. You know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't want to steal Billy's thunder. So,
No, give us some of yours.
Nah, go
and then
for
Billy's
it.
Only his.
All right.
You can't handle the truth.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing that what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth, because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. And I'll stop there, because there's another bit which I'm going to leave for Billy to do.
Boom. Oh, geez. Nice one.
Such a well-written speech. You know, I mean, it's almost a cliche to say that Aaron Sorkin is a good writer.
I was
going to
say,
he's a good writer.
That Sorkin wrote that.
Sorkin is the shit. Yeah. I don't know what your problem is.
No. It shocked me. He was writing that. That long ago, in 1992.
Yeah.
Writer. You know what?
Yeah.
Kevin, what's his name? Who's the guy with Lieutenant Weinberg? The guy
Bacon.
In the movie? No, Kevin. The other Kevin. Pollack.
Oh, right. Okay.
He was interviewed and he said, are you looking at that speech? You know, he says, are you going to do it, Lieutenant Weinberg or Sergeant Weinberg? And he goes, I don't know why that was in the speech at all. It's a really odd thing to talk to Tom Cruise, then talk to Weinberg, then come back to him and never reference him again. And he says that the only reason he reckons that was put in the speech is to suggest that Jessup was anti-Semitic.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, anyway, right. That's what he always thought. So there you go. Writing 101.
All right, that's my number seven. We're around to Billy for your number six.
All right. My number six here, I'm pretty sure isn't going to be on anybody else's list. And this is one of those ones that isn't funny. I just think it's incredibly well written.
Yeah.
It's also the most recent one on my list. This is from 2019's Marriage Story.
Oh,
and nice. It's Laura Dern as the lawyer talking to Scarlett Johansson about the upcoming trial and, you know, because they're fighting over custody and whatnot.
Brilliant.
All right, and here we go. People don't accept mothers who drink too much wine and yell at their child and call him an asshole. I get it. I do it too. We can accept an imperfect dad. Let's face it, the idea of a good father was only invented like 30 years ago. Before that, fathers were expected to be silent and absent and unreliable and selfish, and can all say we want them to be different, but on some basic level we accept it. We love them for their fallibilities, but people absolutely don't accept those same failings in mothers. We don't accept it structurally, and we don't accept it spiritually. Because the basis of our Judeo-Christian whatever is Mary, mother of Jesus, and she's perfect. She's a virgin who gives birth, unwaveringly supports her child, and holds his dead body when he's gone. And the dad isn't there. He didn't even do the fucking. God is in heaven. God is the father, and God didn't even show up. So you have to be perfect, and Charlie can be a fuck-up, and it doesn't matter. You will always be held to a different, higher standard, and it's fucked up, but that's the way it is. Oh, chills.
The plate.
I just think it's so
I well remember
written.
When I saw that, I was like, yeah, I have no idea what it's like to be a woman, even though Paul calls me a girl often.
Yeah, I've got a friend who tells a story about 10, 15 years ago, her kids were very young at that point in time. And I think the two eldest got on a plane with her husband. And the husband was flying himself with the kids. And she'd done this several times. They commuted back and forth between Sydney, I think it was. And she said it really shat her to tears because I think from memory, she got shunted down the back of the plane to a different spot. And he stayed with the kids. Yeah. He said, oh, let me do this one. And apparently he had all the air hostesses, the stewards,
yeah,
fawning over him the whole time because here's this dad with these two little kids. Mm. What a dad. And yet she'd done it every other time, par for the course.
Because he gets extra credit because he's a man, because there's so much shit on women.
I hate it because I'm quite an involved dad, but like you'll be at the grocery store with the kids and undoubtedly some usually older person will come up and be like, oh, you're babysitting today, are you, dad? And it's
what?
Like, no, I'm a dad.
I'm Michael Keaton, y'all. I'm fucking Mr. Mom. What do you worry about? It's my job.
Fascinating. But yeah, cool. that's a really powerful one. And it's nice to hear Laura Dern get a look in here. And was it Noah Baumbach who wrote that?
It is, yeah, Noah Baumbach, yeah.
Again, well, I mean, well written, right? From a given that a male wrote it,
all gangster.
Put it into a female character's
mouth.
He
had sisters, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Wayne, number six.
Okay, my number six is from the film Snatch. And ironically. So
once again, dealing with genitalia.
Yeah, in a way. And this is the scene where Vince Jones, or what his name is sitting down.
Vinny Jones,
that's right. He's sitting in a pub, in a pub, and these dudes come in with balaclavas and they try and rob him. And he busts out his gun and they bust out their guns and they're pointing at each other. And he says, now, dicks have drive and clarity of vision, but they are not clever. They smell pussy and they want a piece of the action. And you thought you smelled some good old pussy. And have brought your two small mincy F-word balls along with for a good old time. But you've got your parties mangled up. There's no pussy here. Just a dose that'll make you wish you were born a woman. Leave it there.
Do you think, Wayne, did Vinny Jones deliver it that way?
No, I don't know what the hell I was doing.
You don't want to finish the last part?
Okay, he says this. I'll finish the last part.
Yep.
Like a prick, you are having second thoughts. You are shrinking and your two little balls are shrinking with you. The fact that you've got replica written down the side of your gun and the fact that I've got Desert Eagle 0.50 written on the side of mine should precipitate your balls into shrinking along with your presence. Now, fuck off.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Good stuff. Yeah, I saw that one and did also consider it one. I guess you would call it an honorable mention.
Yeah, if I was a tougher man, I could sell it better, but you know.
You're putting it in, ironically. Look, number six is where I had Team America World Police.
Oh,
and
nice.
At the risk, therefore we've covered it three times, of really boring people to tears, I'm going to just do the very opening part
and
move on.
Let's hear this one. Let's hear the voice.
We're dicks. We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks. And the Film Actors Guild are pussies. Kim Jong-il is an asshole. Pussies don't like dicks. because pussies get fucked by dicks. But dicks also fuck assholes. Assholes who just want to shit on everything.
Keep going.
It's like a hint of Liam Neeson.
Deal with assholes their way, but the only thing they can fuck are an asshole. A fucking asshole is a dick with some balls. The problem with dicks is that sometimes they fuck too much or fuck when it isn't appropriate. And it takes a pussy to show them that.
Okay, I'll do. Somewhere on the wire, I kind of lost it.
That was great.
It's like improv.
That
was... Always say yes. You know what I'm saying?
Always say yes. Well, if you haven't turned off yet, I can promise you no more Team America World Police quotes. There you go. At least there's that one for you. And I'm also happy to say there is nothing more about dicks or pussies on my list. So,
wish I could say the same, Paul.
All right, Billy. Top half of the list. What's your number five?
All right, here we go. Number five. This is... The top five is where I'm sure we're going to start getting some crossover. And I don't know if this is going to be on your guys' list, but I know that you both enjoy this movie. It's delivered by Mandy Patinkin, and it's written by William Goldman in 1987's The Princess Bride.
This is gold.
Surely it's on your list too.
I'm sure if I picked it, Troy Spinner would say, Paul fucking votes for Princess Bride all the time and not vote for me. So I'm glad it's not on my list on that basis.
All right, so let me channel my Spanish accent here, which
Bring
is,
it on.
This is not great. I do not mean to pry, but... You don't by any chance happen to have six fingers on your right hand? My father was slaughtered by a six-fingered man. He was a great sword maker, my father. And when the six-fingered man appeared and requested a special sword, my father took the job. He slaved a year before he was died. Fuck the accent completely. The six-fingered man returned and demanded it, but at 1/10 his promised price. My father refused. Without a word, the six-fingered man slashed him through the heart. I loved my father, so naturally challenged his murderer to duel. I failed. The six-fingered man did leave me alive with these. I was 11 years old. When I was strong enough, I dedicated my life to the study of fencing. So the next time we meet, I will not fail. I will go up to the six-fingered man and say, Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Very good. Very my good. God.
Paul was mouthing along that whole time. And kind of jerking his dick a bit.
There is a moment where Wes does say to him, how old were you? I was 11 years old. But otherwise, monologue. Yeah. Great moment. Great script.
Nice work.
Great film. It is. I mean, it is my number one film of all time. I just think it is such a...
I think it's perfect
in every single way. Like, there's nothing bad about that movie. And it starts with the script.
Can you please email Nicholas Haskins that very quickly and let him know how... I mean, he didn't obviously see it at the right formative age that perhaps you and I did, Billy. So
yeah.
Yeah. Very nice choice. Glad it made the list, Wayne.
Excellent work. Okay. Now, this one's hard, everyone. It's actually a difficult one. I'm going to kind of like... This is going to be a little bit of like a fucking... Some work for me. It is from Ant-Man.
Oh, right. I do have a query on this one. Is he not narrating as we cut to...
The scene is him talking with flashbacks over him talking in the room.
Oh, is this are we doing Michael Peña?
Michael Peña. Okay.
I put that off.
Yo, at the end of it, Scott, what's his name? Otherwise, Ant-Man actually goes, can you tell me that again? And he tells him like in a shorter version.
Otherwise,
it's in the scene.
I would have had a Shaun of the Dead's plan scene.
That would have been fine. Because it was in the moment and they're only doing...
It feels like narration.
They're playing flashbacks over his scene entry. So it's
just
all
so
good.
The listeners know.
Just so the listeners know.
We left it off our list because it was narration, but Wayne has...
No, you got off the list because you fucked up the brief. All right, that's what happened there. This is an in-situ scene in the scene. They're just playing things
flashbacks.
Well,
we've got three people. We can go to the chairman of the board here to tell us. Is this the kind of thing that's on brand or on topic or off?
Look. I reckon it's narration. There were a couple like this for me.
I got a couple pussies right in here. What the fuck?
There were a couple like this for me where like it cuts into like a real scene after.
If it
and
starts
I'm like,
with
okay,
him in the scene,
but...
it is a scene in the movie. He's just talking with flashbacks playing over him talking. That's not narration.
I mean, I guess we'll let the listeners decide. I know I'm losing already, so I don't really give a shit.
As long as listeners understand that we ruled that kind of thing off our list, Billy, because we stuck to the heart of the brief.
No, because you fucked shit up. You know, this is so off brief, it's in a fucking prison in Siberia right here. That's what's happening right now. So
it is that far off brief.
Uh-huh. No, yours. Anyways. All right, fine. I'm going to give it a go here. Yeah, we'll just see how it goes, okay?
Let's go.
Here we go. Again, Kurt is the name of the dude, and he's trying to help Scott Lang understand, you know, with a very summary about this particular score that he's going to do, and he tells everyone in the clubhouse, and he starts like this. Okay, I was at a wine tasting with my cousin Ernesto, which was mainly reds, and you know I don't like reds, man, but there was a rosé that saved the day. It was delightful. And then he tells me about this girl, Emily, that we used to kick it with. It was actually the first pair of boobs I ever touched. So he tells me that she's working as a housekeeper now, right? And she's dating this dude, Carlos, who's a shot caller from across the bay. And then she tells him about this dude that she's cleaning for, right? His name's, he's like this big shot CEO that's all retired now, but he's loaded. And so Carlos and Ernesto are on the same softball team, and they get to talking, right? And then here comes the good part. Carlos says, yo, man, this guy's got a big-ass safe just sitting in the basement just chilling. Of course, Ernesto comes to me because he knows I got mad thieving skills. Of course, I ask him, did Emily tell Carlos to tell you to tell me or tell me what kind of safe it was? And he says, nah, dog. And all she said was that it's super legit and whatever's in it's got to be good. Scene.
I mean, it is great. It's a lot of fun. It's very fun.
That was the best point of the whole movie for me.
Easily. And, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I had a rumor actually via last week's guest, Stu. So thank you again, Stu, for coming on and thank you for relaying this on your show, that there is somewhere in the Marvel vaults, Michael Peña doing a recap of Infinity War for Avengers Endgame.
God, I would love that. I would love
it. I feel like I've seen that, actually.
Oh, you've seen it?
Really? I remember hearing about it, for sure.
I feel like, yeah, maybe I've just heard about it, but that sounds very familiar to me.
If any of you out there know of this, and you send it through to us, hit us on Facebook, man.
We can probably just type it into Google and find it.
No, Paul, I'm doing it this way.
Okay. All right. I know, I'm not sure about your list, Billy, but there's a good chance this will be on Wayne's. Because it features one of his favorite actors that he will jerk off to at any opportunity that he can.
Calling up now.
It's the second time this actor features on this list, having been in the Team America World Police scene. It's Alec Baldwin.
Ooh.
It's in my honorable mentions, but didn't make my list.
All right. Alec Baldwin as Blake in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah. It's a great moment.
There's a lot. It does have some interaction from people in it. But I picked a bit which doesn't have any interaction, where he's just talking to people and then wheeling away before they respond. So here we go. Fuck you. That's my name. You know why, mister? Because you drive a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name. And your name is You're Wanting. And you can't play in a man's game. You can't close them. And you go home and you tell your wife your troubles. Because only one thing counts in this life. Get them to sign on the line which is dotted. You hear me? You fucking F slur. A, B, C. A, always. B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing. A, I, D, A. Attention, interest, decision, action. Attention, do I have your attention? Interest, are you interested? I know you are because it's fuck or walk. You close or you hit the bricks. Decision, have you made your decision for Christ? And action, A, I, D, A. Now get out there.
Great scene.
It's a great movie, actually.
Not that well done, but it's a great...
I think you played that better than... I didn't have it on my list because I couldn't sell it. Plus, I've already got an Alec Baldwin one on the list. You know what I'm saying?
If we have the other Alec Baldwin one I've got.
Surely it's...
Mine's obscure.
So is mine. Oh, shit. Right. That was an excellent performance and a little Alex, you know? Give me like a semi.
Okay. Got a little Alec.
That's right.
With my pants.
Thanks to Manscaped, it's a little Baldwin too. Oh, shit.
There's your free promotion this week, Fire. Manscaped. Very, very good. All right. Number four, Billy.
All right. Here we go. Here I go with my romance films again. This is what I think is... It's certainly my favorite Kevin Smith film and I think his best written film. This is from 1997's Chasing Amy.
Best film he ever did ever.
Yes. Thank you.
Strikes Back once...
not bad.
I don't know. Like, I love that, but that's really... That's a film for fans. Like, that's not...
I agree.
But I think Chasing Amy is just one of the best written films of all time.
Absolutely.
And this is the scene where Ben Affleck is confessing his love to Joey Lauren Adams' Alyssa in the car.
Oh, bring it on. Back to zero. Here we go.
I love you. And not in a friendly way, although I think we're great friends. And not in a misplaced affection puppy dog way, although I'm sure that's what you'll call it. And it's not because you're unattainable. I love you. Very simple, very truly. You're the epitome of every attribute and quality I've ever looked for in another person. I know you think of me as just a friend, and crossing that line is the furthest thing from an option you'd ever consider, but I had to say it. I can't take this anymore. I can't stand next to you without wanting to hold you. I can't look into your eyes without feeling that longing you only read about in trashy romance novels. I can't talk to you without wanting to express my love for everything you are. I know this will probably queer our friendship, no pun intended, but I had to say it, because I've never felt this before, and I like who I am because of it. And if bringing it to light means we can't hang out anymore, then that hurts me. But I couldn't allow another day to go by without getting it out there, regardless of the outcome, which by the look on your face is the inevitable shoot down, and I'll accept that. but I know that some part of you is hesitating for a moment, and if there is a moment of hesitation, that means you feel something too. And all I ask is that you do not dismiss that, at least for 10 seconds, and try to dwell in it. There we go. It goes on a little bit longer than there, but I reckon that's around the minute mark. But fuck, I love that speech.
Man, that was so good, bro. That was so good. First of all, great performance. But also, when Ben Affleck's telling that shit to Joey Lauren Adams, and then she is like freaked out because she's bi or whatever and she doesn't know what's going on. She gets mad at him, gets out of the car, runs away, and you're like, damn, and he gets out and the scene's in the rain and he's saying, and then it's just, hold on, and she jumps back into his arms from out of the frame. I'm like, it happened! It happened!
I know.
It could be, I was like, fuck, this is good. This is so good. Remember when he could write? Remember when Kevin Smith could write?
I know. Before he just got high all the time.
And Kevin.
I know that it's like, it's a really indie, kind of grungy looking film, but I love the cinematography in this film too. I think it's one of his best looking films for what it's trying to do. And and that scene where it's just the two of them in the car there, it's just, it's a fucking great moment.
That bit where he says, I know there's a hesitation there and I want you to dwell in that. That's such a great line.
To think like that, you know, to think like, this is how I convince you because I'm in love with you, right? It's just anything that I've got, I'll give it to you, you know?
Yeah. And Kevin Smith was a fairly young man. Like, this was like realistically his first really serious script because this was off the back of Mallrats.
Mallrats, yeah.
And he'd done Clerks before, obviously, but
You know why it was the bomb? It's because for me, it feels like being 23, that movie. Like you were hanging out in these indie joints with fucking your friends and shit. And someone would say, we want to go to a slam poetry thing. And you'd be like, no. And so it's like.
Now, Wayne's like, will I get some ass? Yes.
It's not that kind of slam poetry, Paul. But yeah, so it's totally my favorite of his films, like by far and away.
I don't have anything as good as that line, but I do. I'm going to share
one of
my greatest lines, I think, ever.
Oh, come on.
When I was interested in someone who was in a relationship, and I was technically in a relationship at the very end of a death throes of a relationship. And I'd said, in this completely, like, you know, I felt like there was this mutual attraction there. And I said to her, do you think in a different life we might have been something?
Oh, how'd it go?
Oh. We ended up spending a bunch of years together.
Yeah, I'd fuck you, Paul.
Wait, is this a. Yeah. Oh, really? You said that to her?
To go, yeah.
Motherfucker, play like a player. Look at that shit. All I ever managed was, fuck me if I'm wrong, but aren't you Elvis?
She turns around and says, we're going to win this race.
We're going to win this race.
Lemonade. Refreshing drink.
All right, sorry. Got a bit off the track there.
Perfect, perfect.
Well, I'm sure hopefully people won't mind too much. Wayne, what is your... Following on from that, number four.
Okay, so this is a film that I have always liked, and it's not so well known. It's called Swimming with Sharks.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Frank Whaley?
Frank Whaley Jr. and Kevin Bateman Spacey.
Yep. I don't recall this film.
Dude,
have you not seen it?
No,
you should totally check this out.
Pretty
good. Film, yeah. You go on.
Early 90s, right?
94, 94. I'm mid. So Kevin Spacey is this like movie exec, and he's known to be the biggest asshole in Hollywood. Frank Whaley actually becomes his assistant or whatever, which is a coveted position because the next thing you usually jump to is like an actual like executive position. But anyway, he gets his ass kicked. Like Frank, what's his name?
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Sorry, spoke it away.
It's not the drugs.
Kevin Spacey is like just being a total prick to him, so much so that Frank Whaley gets pissed off and kidnaps him and ties him up and fucking tortures him. But in a funny sort of way.
No.
I know, in a funny sort of way.
In a funny sort of way. Kidnapping and torture, funny.
Well, it's played actually, it's pretty dark. Anyway. So what happens is this scene here, right? Kevin Spacey is tied up in a chair and he's been like, you know, he's had his hair cut and shit by Frank Whaley. He's really getting pissed off. And now he's finally had enough and he's like, fucking, he's going to talk back to him. And he's giving him shit saying, you think, you know, no, you're 25 years old, you're getting complacent. And then he comes up with this. Look, I don't make the rules. I play by them. What, your job is unfair to you? Grow up. Way it goes. People use you? Life's unfair? Grow up. Way it goes. Your girlfriend doesn't love you? Tough shit. Way it goes. Your wife gets raped and shot, and then they leave their unfinished beers. They're stinking long necks just lying there on the ground. So be it. Way it goes. Now you want to tell me what you really want, what this is really about, what happened to you? We're left with just one thing. The only thing I know that drives men to hurt, to want. This is about a girl, isn't it, guy? This is about Dawn. All this over a chick, you fool. All right, guy. Come on. Let's finish this. Give it to me. Show me what you're made of. Show me what you've learned. Don't let me down, son. Everything I've taught you comes down to this. This is the only way you can ever hope to survive, because life is not a movie. Everyone lies. Good guys lose. And love does not conquer all. So let's do this thing. Let's finish it. Do it! Come on! Do it now! Bang! And then there's a gunshot. And that is how the movie actually ends, kind of. But then you find out what happens later. You know what I'm saying?
So it doesn't end.
Dude. Oh, you just got my vote, Wayne. That was...
How the scene ends.
Oh, you got me all emotional there.
It's a great scene. It's a really great scene. And it's longer than that. So there you go.
Yeah.
Very nice. I thought for a second there you'd get a cough, but then it turned out to be emotional. I was putting a voice crack in.
I know, I got it
after the fact, but I'm so not used to you showing emotion other than
anger. Or cackling like a whore, yes.
Yeah, funny, obviously, different story. Well, ironically, my number four moment monologue involves a fair bit of anger as well. This one comes out of Training Day. One of your favorite films.
Oh, well, the exception to the rule. The only good film you ever made.
Antoine Fuqua. This one's written by David Ayer, which, you know, he's become a divisive man, but obviously I'm talking about Training Day.
Ah.
Denzel as Alonzo Harris. And this is at the end of the film where Ethan Hawke's Jake has basically just left him in the lurch with the residents of, I think it's called the jungle, and they're going to fix him. They're going to basically end his life. Here we go. This is going to be difficult. Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. You think you could do this shit? Jack! You think you could do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program. End slur. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of... Who the fuck do you think you're fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go on, walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Boom.
There we go.
Fucking brilliant. Yeah, that's a great one.
Awesome.
Sorry. Well, after I tried to get that page to load, the whole time there it kept going, error in my... on my browser, so it kept shifting up and down. My apologies, I'm missing this place there once or twice.
Nice one. I think we're over to Billy for his number three.
All right, here we go. I am certain that this film is going to make at least Paul's list. I'm 100% certain this is his number one, if not his number two. So to keep things different, I went with a different monologue than what I think Paul's going to have.
From the same
So film. Here's where I get to crack out my Christopher Walken impression from 1994's Pulp Fiction.
Oh, ew, here we go.
I love this monologue. Like, obviously people go on about the Sam Jackson one. I actually think this is better, and it's going to be really hard for me because...
I actually agree.
I think so too. And like, honestly, if you ever did like best one scene performances, because from memory this is Walken's only scene in this film, which it's just insanely good. So to do it justice in only a minute is going to be really hard because the whole thing goes for 4 minutes. But I just think that his performance is so good in this scene. He really like goes from emotional to hilarious in mere milliseconds.
Mm.
So here we go.
Here we go.
This watch was on your daddy's wrist when he was shot down over Hanoi. It was captured and put in a Vietnamese prison camp. Now, he knew if the slurs ever saw the watch, it'd be confiscated. The way your daddy looked at it, that watch was your birthright, and he'd be damned if any slurs were going to put their greasy slur hands on your boy's birthright. So he hid it in the one place he knew he could hide something. His ass. 5 long years he wore this watch up his ass. And when he died of dysentery, he gave me the watch. I hid this uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass for 2 years. And then after 7 years, I was sent home to my family. And now, little man, I give the watch to you.
Nice work.
Thank you.
That's what I was waiting for. Both like both get very like raspy, like a file biting into steel. It's like that.
Obviously blew me out of the water. Well done, Billy. That's nice great. One. Great effort.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. All right. So this is the smarmy one, my number three. It is from The Social Network, and it is the attention monologue. It's what happens is Mark Zuckerberg is in a legal like proceeding kind of room thing, and the lawyer is talking to him, and he's staring out the window, and he's like, "Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?" He's like, "No." "Do you think I deserve it? You think I deserve your full attention?" Then Mark Zuckerberg comes into this because he's so pissed off at these fucking lawyers fucking with him, and he goes, "I had to swear an oath before we began this deposition, and I don't want to perjure myself, so I have a legal obligation to say no. I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try. But there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to you people lie. You have my part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?"
That is so great.
Jesse Eyes.
There's another great scene in that, which is Andrew Garfield.
Yes.
When he's talking about, he's in the deposition. And then it goes, I ruled it out because he's telling the story and it flashes back and forth in between.
Would have been fine.
But when he walks, he comes storming in and he goes.
This is when he yells at Justin Timberlake, right?
Yeah. Well, both of them.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And he smashes the computer and he's going off about, you know, basically stole from me.
Yes.
And this is all about. Whatever that thing was, where the pig thing and blah, blah, blah. And I got into that and you didn't and blah. It's like, you think I'm coming back for half? You better lawyer up, asshole, because I'm coming back for all of it.
Yeah. Yep.
Such a good line.
And the like, Flint, you pull Justin. Yeah, Justin. Yeah. That's hard to say.
I like standing next to you.
Yeah.
You make me feel so tough.
Yeah. One of the best written movies of all time. I don't know how true this is, but I heard that when Sorkin handed in the script for that, it was like, 240 pages or something, which is outrageous because the general rule of thumb is one page a minute.
Yep.
And the studio was like, this is going to be ridiculous. How are you going to do this? He's like, oh, it's going to work. It's going to work. Just because they talk so fast all the time in that movie.
Oh, so it really was a 200. Everything was filmed in that 240.
I believe so. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Sorkin is Sorkin, man. Oh, he's the Christopher Nolan of writers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my number three then. Here is my last Alec Baldwin entrant on the list.
Oh, okay.
Have you had it yet?
No.
Any more Alec Baldwin for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. This is from Malice.
Yes, hello!
There were two instantly that came to mind for me, my number one and this one. And then ended up as my number two came to me a little bit later and I slapped my forehead in stupidity or annoyance at myself. Have you seen Malice from 1993, Billy?
I have not, but I have heard you guys talk about it. So it is on my list.
Okay. So my memory of it is it's kind of it's a three-star film, but...
No, this movie's great, man.
It's got a wonderful performance, particularly from Alec Baldwin. He plays this doctor, this surgeon who operates on Nicole Kidman and makes a call, basically, that ends up with her losing the capacity to have children.
Yeah.
So she loses both ovaries rather than one because one is necrotic or whatever it is.
And he's a shit-hot surgeon.
Yeah. And, you know, he's Alec Baldwin at the prime of his Alec Baldwinness. So where Wayne was jerking off to him every
day. Absolutely. And nurses are just throwing poontang at him. It's like, hit him in the head.
Right? So he's being, basically, she's suing him and he's up before on this deposition again.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Gallagher is playing the lawyer and he's just asked him basically an inane question and this is where he goes. Which makes me wonder if this... lawyer has any idea as to the kind of grades one has to receive in college to be accepted at a top medical school. If you have the vaguest clue as to how talented one must be to lead a surgical team. I have an MD from Harvard. I am board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery. I've been awarded citations from 7 different medical boards in New England, and I am never, ever sick at sea. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from post-operative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now you go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church, and with any luck you might win the annual raffle. But if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God. And this sideshow is over.
Oh, that's great.
Boom.
That's real good.
That's real good. That's actually my number 2, so I don't want to actually jump in on that one, but that is fucking great.
you're going to have to give your one we came round, I reckon. Right, give another version.
I'll give a version of it.
Because yeah, you and Alec are so close. I'm sure you'll do it more justice.
I don't know, man. It's hard to jump on that. But okay, let's give it a try later. But nice one. Billy, you're number two, my man.
All right, here we go. Number twos. Here we are. Well, this is where I had the You Can't Handle the Truth speech from A Few Good Men.
You want to give us a piece?
Yeah, well, give us the last part, Billy. I left you that one.
Going to have to move back from the mic. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide them. I'd rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you're entitled to. I'm sure I was peeking all over the place there, but you got to give it your all, you know, because Jack is
losing. You got to spit it out.
There might be a little bit of roughness in this audio recording, but the emotion will be there for all to hear. So. Very, very nice. All right, so Wayne's version.
All right, I'm going to take just the last couple of sentences, okay? Throw it at you here. Okay, here we go. Now, you go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church, and with any luck, you might win the annual raffle. But if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November the 17th, and he doesn't like to be second guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God. And that's where I landed.
That's good stuff.
Very nice. Sorry, stealing your thunder.
No, I've stolen many viewers.
You've stolen dick and pussies, and I stole God complex. So
you can keep the God complex. Shit.
Very good. By number two, I'm shocked that no one else had it. I thought maybe you might be, but we haven't had your number one, so who knows? One of the greatest films ever made, the greatest film of the 70s, Jaws.
Here we go. Yep.
Okay.
You've stolen my number one thunder.
All right. Because this is a quit? Really long. Yeah,
it's long. It's long.
Why don't you take a piece each?
Yeah. So how should we divide this one up? I had written from very first like Chief Sharks Come Cruising By and got it to... they rip you to pieces. So I had that part.
I just had going from the start until I forget where I was going to stop. Yeah,
well, why don't you go first with the start until you want to stop, and then I'll jump. Hopefully it's not covering all of mine.
Japanese submarine slammed 2 torpedoes into her side, Chief. She was coming back from the island of Tanay into late. We just delivered the bomb. Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half hour. Tiger, 13 footer. You know how you know that in the water, Chief? You can tell by looking from the dozer to the tail. You can go from there.
Ooh. That's great.
Yes.
Very nice.
Awesome. I wasn't sure if you were going to continue. You've done a good little impression there. It's going to be hard to pick that one up.
No, let's hear it. It's good. It's good. I'm excited. Here we go.
We didn't even really set the scene, but everyone's seen Jaws, right?
So, yeah, he's on the boat. He's telling the other three about the shit that happened to him.
The other two. All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Hard to follow that act. The very first light chief, sharks come cruising by. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. It was sort of like you see in the calendars, you know? The infantry squares in the old calendars like the Battle of Waterloo. And the idea was a shark comes to the nearest man. That man starts pounding and hollering. And sometimes that shark, you go away. But sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes the shark looks right at you. Right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes. Like a doll's eyes. When he comes at you, he doesn't even seem to be living. Till he bites you. And those black eyes roll over all white. And then, then you hear the terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red. In spite of all the pounding and hollering, they all come in and they rip you to pieces.
Oh, excellent. Ooh. Chilling.
Look at that shit. Very kind. This is why I don't go in the water.
And Asian.
And Asian, yeah.
All right, well, that's we've gone all the way around our twos. So 10 through two, Billy, give us a recap of your list.
All right, let's do it. So at number 10,
number one.
At number 10, I had Jerking Off on a Plane from Mallrats. Number number I 9, number I had Lloyd's Future from Say Anything. Number 8 is How I Feel About Life from Annie Hall. Number 7 is where I had Dicks Fuck Assholes from Team America. Number six is The Perfect Dad from Marriage Story. Number five is Where I Had the Six-Fingered Man from The Princess Bride. Number four, I Love You from Chasing Amy. Number three, The Watch from Pulp Fiction. At number two is Where I Had You Can't Handle the Truth from A Few Good Men. And number one was The USS Indianapolis from Jaws.
Sorry, I just realized we had already spoiled your number one. Yeah. Thank you. Awesome stuff. All right, Wayne, your 10 through 2, and then your number one. Do we have the same... one.
We don't. Oh. There's no way you got this. There's no way you got this. Okay. Number 10 was Team America, World Police, that one. 9 was The Taken Speech. 8, Get Shorty, about the ease of script writing. 7, Casino, about busting a bank manager's asshole. Snatch was number 6, about the dicks and pussies stuff. Ant-Man was Lewis's number 5. Was Lewis's thing about, you know, all the shit that he was doing. Number 4, Swimming with Sharks speech at the end. 3, The Social Network Attention speech. Number 2 was Malice, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And my number one is, I'm surprised he hasn't come up, but Al Pacino is about to turn up, everyone. Okay. And wow. I'm going to do some of that, right? Now, it may not, it's not Cinema Born, okay? Because that one is like, it's an old one. This is my favorite speech of his. It's from a movie called Devil's Advocate, which is with Keanu Reeves.
Ooh.
Al Pacino actually plays the devil. And at the end, like, spoilers, everyone, but like,
old film.
The whole way through, Keanu Reeves is basically finding out that, holy shit, this guy, this new, like, boss of mine who's in this law firm that I just joined is actually my dad. And my dad is the devil. Al Pacino is playing the devil. And he's now found out about it, like, and he's like, okay. And his name is John Milton as the devil. And he's talking to Keanu Reeves and explaining to him why I'm the devil and I'm right. And it goes like this. Who are you carrying all these bricks for anyway? God? Is that it? God, well, I'll tell you. Let me tell you a little inside information about God. God likes to watch. He's a prankster. Think about it. He gives man instincts. He gives you this extraordinary gift. And then what does he do? I swear, for his own amusement, his own private cosmic gag reel, he sets the rules in opposition. It's the goof of all time. Look, but don't touch. Touch, but don't taste. Taste, but don't swallow. And while you're jumping from one foot to the next, what's he doing? He's laughing his sick fucking ass off. He's a tight ass. He's a sadist. He's an absentee landlord. Worship that? Never. I'm here on the ground with my nose in it since the whole thing began. I nurtured every sensation man has been inspired to have. I cared about what he wanted, and I never judged him. Why? Because I never rejected him. In spite of all his imperfections, I'm a fan of man. I'm a humanist. Maybe the last humanist. Who in their right mind, Kevin, could possibly deny that the 20th century was entirely mine? And scene.
That was a good Pacino impression,
really,
my friend.
It's a little wavery.
It's always hard to know.
Great ass!
Didn't pick that one, Kevin. That's nice.
Isn't that cool? That's about him saying, fuck God, like kind of thing. I was like, oh my God, this is so harsh at the time when I heard it. I'm like, damn.
The Catholic in Wayne is just going,
I know, my Catholic guilt was like, spank. So yeah, it was just bad.
All right, very, very nice there. My running through my list then, revealing my number one. Number 10, William Wallace's speech in A Braveheart. 9, Virgil, a.k.a. James Gandolfini, being awful to Alabama in True Romance. 8, Taken, the very famous Liam Neeson speech. Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men at number 7. Team America World Police, of course, you've heard it so many times today. At number 6, Glengarry Glenn Ross's Alec Baldwin. I can't believe you didn't have a Baldwin speech on your list.
The Malice one.
Sorry?
The Malice one. I had Malice.
Oh, Malice. Of course you do. Sorry.
Fine. But not Malice. No.
Yeah, not that one. Number 4, Training Day, Denzel Washington as Alonzo Harris. Number 3, the aforementioned Malice, Alec Baldwin again. I can't remember his name. What's his name? Jed. Quint's speech in Jaws at number 2. And my number 1 is exactly as Billy predicted. Samuel L. Jackson as Jewel Winfield.
Here we go.
Written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction. So here we go. I thought this would be on everyone's list and I would be coming to it late and being able to do a really half-assed impersonation.
No. I want your whole balls out on this one.
All right, here we go. I have no idea how this episode is going to sound because we haven't been keeping track of what it looks like.
Yeah. Remember, breathe from your stomach.
Here we go.
Here we go.
You read the Bible, Brett? Well, there's this passage I got memorized. Sort of fits the occasion. Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord
when I lay my vengeance upon thee. Kaboom, 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 kaboom.
I was going to do this. I have a little... There you go.
That was a solid Sam Jackson, my friend.
That was pretty good right at the end there. I thought you was going to, you know, grow a fro.
The intonations I've got, because I had the CD, right? The Pulp Fiction CD had snippets of dialogue from the film. Yeah.
Remember when they did that?
I remember that.
Yeah.
In, particularly in Tarantino films, they did that. And this was one of the tracks on it. So I must have heard that.
Oh my God, you would have, it's
three, four. I knew it off by heart. That's why you nailed it.
Oh my God, you knew it off by heart? This guy was actually nailing it like fucking rote, y'all. That's, woo. I thought there was a laser in your ear.
Even the bit before it is really good, but it's more of a dialogue where he's like, what does Marcellus Wallace look like?
Does he look like a bitch?
Does he look like a bitch? Yeah. What? Say what again? Yeah, all the rest of that shit. So there are. That's our list. Now, look, I assume we've run long, but just run down any honorable mentions you might have had, not obviously not doing the bits. Billy, what have you got, first of all?
So, I mean, a lot of what you guys had was on my list. I had I'm Mad as Hell from Network. Mm. It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey losing it at Mr. Potter. Good Will Hunting, Your Move Chief. I was surprised that wasn't on your guys' list.
That was too hard to sell, Braveheart, that one. That was so hard.
Yeah, yeah. And Sam Jackson's speech from Deep Blue Sea as well was one that I toyed with a little bit.
In the end, I shopped it off because Sam Jackson hated that scene so much, and they cut it apparently from 7 pages down or something, seven minutes or something.
He hated the scene.
Hated it.
Because it's so preachy.
And in the end, they moved him around the spot you need to hit for the shark to eat him, and they cut it really early. And then he was happy because he's like, oh, thank God.
Oh, yeah.
You think water's fast? You should see ice. What does that fucking mean? Ice is literally glacially slow. What he meant to say was, what it should have read was snow. You know, when snow falls down a mountain. But anyway,
yeah.
Ryan, what have you got?
Okay, I'm surprised no one did the 300, this is Sparta thing.
Cross the lines, yep.
The Blade Runner at the end, you know, with the, you know, tears in the rain. Lucy Liu from Kill Bill, which
I had that on my
mentions. Fuck. That's just funny.
And that's great. I want you to be able to come to me, da-da-da-da. Except unless it's about my heritage, in which case I will cut a motherfucker's head off.
It's like blam, 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 blam. So it's pretty cool. And then, of course, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah. Very as mentioned, Kill Bill, Oren Ishii, and I had Hans Lander from Inglourious Basterds.
That one is so tough.
Yeah, couldn't sell it. So that's all I had as my honorable mentions. Beyond what's already been mentioned today. All right, then, let's get straight into it. What you have to say about the topic at hand in the segment which wraps up every episode. It's called the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Mike Margosian, patron extraordinaire. Number 3, Alec Baldwin, Glengarry Glen Ross. So including the ABC Always Be Closing. He also had Cluffy's for Closers and First Place as a Cadillac, etc.
Good stuff, good stuff.
Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. The story how he skipped an iconic Red Sox game to meet his future wife was awesome. And number 1, Sam Jackson in Pulp Fiction. What a great Bible read. Josh Ragland said, you can't handle the truth. Number 3, from A Few Good Men. Number 2, The Plan from Shaun of the Dead. So he would have given me the idea for that one. And number 1 again, Ezekiel 25:17 from Pulp Fiction. Rob Walters, number 1 came to you immediately, he said, and that is the final game speech from Miracle. You wouldn't have seen that. Wayne, have you seen Miracle?
I have, I'm a hockey fan, so good one.
Okay, so that one struck a chord for you?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
Kurt Russell, giving that one, Wayne, for your info. Nice. And You Are Not Your Monologue from Fight Club. And Bench Monologue from Good Will Hunting. I guess the listeners didn't have the caveat we had about non-narration and voiceovers and stuff. Apparently Wayne didn't have it either.
True that.
Adam Allure, top level patron to the show, said, number 3, Get Busy Living or Get Busy Dying speech by Andy Dufresne.
Andy Dufresne.
In The Shawshank Redemption. The aforementioned Wayne, number 2, King Leonidas' final speech in 300.
Mm-hmm.
And the one you mentioned, Billy, George Bailey, a.k.a. Jimmy Stewart, telling off Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a good one.
Telling him off, Mr. Potter barely even blinked an eyelid. He's such a prick. But anyway. Mina Harker, Love and Hate from Do the Right Thing. Number 2, you can't handle the truth from A Few Good Men. Number 1, Alec Baldwin's first place, second place, third place from Glengarry Glen Ross. Kristen Arcaro had Cerulean Blue monologue from Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada. I've never seen that movie.
No, me neither.
I keep wanting to watch it. I really need to watch it.
You seen it, Billy?
No, never seen it.
No. Okay. Sorry, Kristen. Number 2, There's No Bathroom for Me Here. Taraji P. Henson in Hidden Figures. Also haven't seen that one.
Me neither.
No.
And last one I have seen, which is a voiceover though, Cool Girl from Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl.
Yeah. That was good.
Very good. David Power, top of the page of the show, said his number 3, USSS. Did I say that 3 times? Indianapolis in Jaws. Number 2, Apocalypse Now's is Kurtz's The Horror. And number 1, no contest, Charlie Chaplin in The Great Dictator.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Bloody I did hell. See that pop up a lot on like other people's lists, but yeah,
that literary motherfucker dropping Charlie Chaplin up in here like a goddamn fucking scholar. He always pulls this shit.
Way to make us feel dumb.
What up, D?
Aaron Dundee said, on David, he's been on your Patreon feed a couple of times. Is that right?
No, he has. Episodes. That's right. He's a patron of our show, and he's at the level where he got to come on as a guest recently. So we did an episode on what's that guy's name?
Tarsim Singh?
Yeah. Tarsim. So we did an episode on Tarsim's The Cell, and we've recorded another one on The Fall, which will come out soon as well.
Oh, that one's on there. Okay, I've heard it in the Patreon feed. All right. Aaron Dundee said, Dicks, Pussies, and Arseholes speech, of course, from Team America. Team America : World Police, as he rightfully called it. Number two, Say Goodnight to the Bad Guy from Scarface. And number one, My Heart is Full locker room speech from Friday Night Lights. I haven't seen that one. It's John. We all know your name because I can't say it today. Sarah Goldarb's Breakdown to a Son in Requiem for a Dream. No Hey Bander from A Holland Drive, and Willem Dafoe losing his shit at Robert Pattinson in The Lighthouse.
That's that is a good one, actually. The Lighthouse is a great movie.
Brianna Petty just had the Lucy Liu Kill Bill Volume 1 decapitation before a monologue. What yes, girl. Please. Brad Hargis, Samuel L. Jackson's speech in Deep Blue Sea right before. Chop.
Yes.
James Vanderbeek's halftime of Varsity Blues.
And really?
The opportunity to play like gods. And number one again, Kurt Russell in Miracle. We were born for this. All right, last two, to wrap it up so Wayne doesn't have an aneurysm. Julio from The Contrarians, Chris Evans' confession in Snowpiercer, I know that something tastes best. That's a spoiler, he's blanking out there. Tony's farewell in Avengers Endgame, God, what a world. Universe now. And the opening of Annie Hall.
Yeah, you go, Julio.
I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me. Very famous line. And lastly, Adelaide Spence, some shout-outs to less obvious answers. Junie Delpley's monologue about love in Before Sunset. Quinlan confessing to his crimes in Touch of Evil, and Michael's final unraveling in Anomalisa, which I haven't seen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Thank
Some
you.
Some great varied choices there. Thanks to everyone so much for getting back to us. And thanks to the man at the other end of the line, B Dizzle, for joining us today in what's been a big episode. Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Billy D.
They should know by now, but how do listeners find your show and check you out and get on board with the We Watch the Thing train?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. This has just been a hell of a lot of fun. And I'm sorry that my topic was one of the longer ones, but
who knew?
Maybe they dug it anyway. Maybe they dug it.
Sure, you can check out We Watched a Thing wherever you listen to podcasts just by searching for We Watched a Thing. You can find me at wewatchedathing.com or you can reach out at wewatchedathing@gmail.com. And I'm on all the socials at We Watched a Thing.
Awesome. Awesome. And Wayne, how do the listeners find us? There's a simple way. You can really number
Wayne, go to thecountdownpodcast.com. Is that it? I can't. You know what I would do, though? I would actually Google us and find our socials, and all the links are in the show notes. One guy talking.
Soon enough, when I get tired of doing the show notes to such an extent, it will just have thecountdownpodcast.com. So sort your shit out.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right. Word.
All right. We haven't decided on next week's topic, so we'll let you know that in due course. So we're going to get out of here on that bombshell. Thank you so much to our guest again. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
My name is B Dizzle.
And this has been The Soundboard, which got barely used today. I'm very, very sorry to all the fans of The Soundboard.
Bag of ass.
You're fat, bloated, stupid, idiot.
We need to change the brief when it suits you. We'll catch you next time. See ya.